It is 12 minutes after 8 o'clock on the Kevin and Bean Show.
Hey, we're excited about this. Please welcome to the studio our next guest, who can currently be seen on theaters all over Los Angeles in the re-release of Moulin Rouge, co-starring along with the lovely Nicole Kidman. It is Ewan McGregor.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, Ewan, what's up, man?
Oh, yeah. Thanks very much. Thanks for having me on.
Happy to have it. You know, we're just talking to Ewan during the song there about he's in town because of this re-release, and I know we sound like we're shills for the movie company. Because
I know I feel like I should be getting paid from them as much right. Many commercials as we do for your movie.
Can we do that? Is there a chance? Can we ask somebody?
I don't know. We ought to be, but we're not.
Because we just had your funny little friend Baz Luhrmann in on Monday, where we spent an hour talking about this movie. But the truth is that there are some people who didn't see it the first time around, and the way you want to see this movie is on the big screen, and we just feel like it's our civic duty to get the word out that the thing's great and you ought to go see it.
Oh, that's good. Well, that's good. Yeah, no, I heard that Baz had been on and in fact, he told me, he said, I was on K-Rock this morning. I went, Why wasn't I on K-Rock this morning? Get me on K-Rock. Somebody get me on K-Rock.
He told us that you spent a year and a half of your life making that movie. How does a guy like you even carve out a year and a half as much as you work? It seems like you're a busy actor.
Yeah, well, it just depends. I mean, the project was going to demand a lot of rehearsal, so we rehearsed for four months.
Now, tell me about a typical movie. Do you have rehearsals? Do you do it for no rehearsals? Or do you?
You're lucky if you get a couple of weeks.
A couple of weeks. And this was 4 months.
And some none at all. This was 4 months rehearsal. So there was a lot of ground to cover. We didn't know how, you know, there's no common knowledge in how you shoot musical stuff
anymore. Did he say to you, I just want you to know going in, it's going to be 4 months. We got to rehearse this much.
Yeah. We knew it would be a long haul. It did go way over. I mean, we didn't know it would be that long, but... It was worth it. I enjoyed every day.
What was harder, the singing or the dancing rehearsals for you?
The dancing rehearsals, because to look really fluid on screen dancing, you have to rehearse it over.
Oh, you don't have to tell me that.
Yeah. But you can.
Kevin was a rock star for four seasons.
You don't have to rehearse.
Kevin's got natural grace,
isn't he? Yeah. You can see him just on the mic now.
He's very light in the loafers.
Thanks.
Thanks, Rob.
Now, did you get the sense? And here's what blows us away. We always talk about how this movie works on so many different levels, but what blows us away is that it is cacophony on the screen. There's 100 things happening at once. On every edge of the screen is taken up with something. That's why you need to go back and see it more than once. But did you sense that Baz had all of that in mind, had the whole thing laid out ahead of time, or was he kind of making it up as he went along, did you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think the whole feeling of the Moulin Rouge, he knew exactly what he wanted it to feel like, you know, and what he wanted it to look like. But the story-wise, that was evolving, I think, right through even till after we finished filming. He was still changing the plot around while he was editing. You know?
Really?
He's unstoppable. You probably got a sense of that when he came on.
Yeah, right? Sure. Yes, now, did you have a sense of what it was going to look like? Or in the end, did you go, wow, this is an amazing thing?
No, I think when I sat down to watch it in London with Richard Roxburgh, the guy who plays the Duke, and we sat down to watch it together in London a year after we finished filming it.
Right.
And it was just exactly the world that, you know, we'd been in, and also the one that Baz had described to me. And it's quite amazing. You can go back and see it hundreds of times. You know, we met a woman. We met a woman at the screening the other night, who was seeing it for the 40th time.
Oh my God! Yeah. 40 times. Yeah. She needs to have her head examined.
Oh, well, there you are. But I don't know. It's like your favorite album. You know.
Yeah.
You get something new out of it every time.
That's true.
Yeah, so
that's
go true. Back and see Moulin Rouge.
Did you have any sense of how commercially viable it was? Because you know there are a lot of people who thought it was too far out for the mainstream.
Yeah. Well, I think you know he went to Fox because he'd made. Strictly Ballroom Dancing.
Right.
And I think at first he wanted to make a film about ballroom dancing. They were like, oh, come on.
Right.
And then he went back and said, okay, look. After
talk about light the loafers.
Yeah. Let's do Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet. And they were like, oh, no, please. Can we not do a film about ballroom dancing? So this time, you know, I don't know, to try and reinvent the musical was something else.
Yeah. How did you get interested in this?
Just that, I mean, Baz is so inspirational, and I'd met him for Romeo and Juliet, and we did some work on that. And then he went a different way with the casting. So we'd already worked and met for that, and then he'd remembered that and came back to meet me and asked me to sing for him and stuff.
But there was Did you have any kind of background in singing? Did you plays or anything growing up? Or
I'd never done a musical before. I've always sung, and I've always loved music, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Have you ever sung professionally or in any... Way
no, I mean, I've sung in other films. I did a film called Velvet Goldmine, where I did all my own singing.
Yeah,
but then
right.
This was the first time I had to sing, you know, where the music was part of the storytelling.
Right.
In Velvet Goldmine, I was playing a drugged-up rock star. So if I sounded like a crock of.
Right.
Wouldn't make any sense.
It'd be good.
Nice edit, by the way.
Yeah.
Can you sing in Life Less Ordinary, too, in the karaoke scene?
Yeah, karaoke scene. Yeah.
That's right. I remember that.
Yeah,
by the way, this might be an outstanding time to point out that you look at the films that Ewan McGregor's made, and you got them, you know, romantic with Nicole Kidman, with Ashley Judd, with Cameron Diaz. The man is no fool.
No,
okay? The guy knows
not.
What to look for when it comes to casting.
Nice work.
All right. We need to take a break.
Oh, you're a bad man.
You and McGregor
boo!
Is here.
Kevin, boo!
Ewan McGregor is here. We need to take a break. Can you stick around for some more?
Sure,
we have so much to talk to you
There's
about.
There's a little film called Star Wars or something, I think.
No, he wasn't involved. In that. That was
no?
someone else.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, don't worry. We'll be right back.
Kevin and Bean.
Genius. That's what it is.
Now, Kevin, this is the song that you do the karaoke to in the clubs?
No, this turns out this wasn't the one, no.
All right. We're talking about Moulin Rouge, Ewan McGregor, co-star of the film, in the studios of K-Rock this morning. Check this out from the soundtrack, Come What May, on K-Rock.
The Wave.
No, actually, it's still us, still K-Rock. Ewan McGregor, Nicole Kidman from Moulin Rouge.
I love to think about people whose alarm just went off during that song, and they're like, what is happening with K-Rock?
What the hell is going on?
That's
going
to be my wedding song.
Is it?
Absolutely.
Ewan McGregor.
So never, right? You'll never hear that at a wedding,
right? Hey,
can
we die
Ralph?
Alone and old?
You're hopeless, man. There's no way. Ewan McGregor is our guest in the studio. That's pretty good work right there for a couple of foreigners. I don't mind telling you. That's
you can sing.
Well,
you
know,
range, son.
We gave it our best shot.
And the outrage is, and we talked about this with Baz on Monday, is if ever there was a song that screams, hey, I'm the Oscar-winning best song of the year, it's that one, and it's because of a technicality. I guess it's not not eligible, right?
Yeah, it was written for Romeo and Juliet. And,
that's too bad.
And then wasn't used in that.
Can't they just lie about it?
Maybe there could be a category for songs that were written for other movies that weren't used, though. You know?
Yeah, there you go.
I don't know.
Whoever told the truth should be fired.
Right.
Don't tell them that. And like Baz, it would have been great to have Ewan and Nicole sing it at the Oscars.
Exactly.
That would have been awesome.
You're right. Now, let's change gears for just a second, because, as Kevin mentioned, there's a bunch of things we need to talk to you about. I got to be honest when I tell you that there were millions of people around the world who were really surprised to see you sign on to the Star Wars franchise because of the kind of work you had done in the past. No one expected you to do a blockbuster like that.
Right.
Tell us about taking the role and why and how and how you felt about it at the time.
Well, I thought about it for a long time. I mean, and the nearer I got to getting the part, the more I realized that I really wanted to do it. And I think,
did you consciously steer away from projects like this in the past?
Well, yeah, I just never made it my, you know, I didn't come over to L.A. and try and break into the big blockbusters because they didn't particularly interest me.
Right.
However, Star Wars is slightly different, and I think it still is. It kind of stands alone, you know? They are blockbusters. They're huge movies. But because people remember the first three from their childhoods or whatever, they kind of have a special place, you know?
You were 6 when you saw the first Star Wars?
Yeah, I must have been 6.
6
yeah.
years old, and then all of a sudden you're in it.
Yeah, it's weird. It's
not
weird.
Only in it, but you're Obi-Wan Kenobi, which is one of the tent poles of the mythology.
Right.
Yeah. I'm playing the tent pole of myth.
And what's the...
I've played a few tent poles in my time, I can tell you.
Well, you've certainly shown your tent pole enough times in enough movies, I'll tell you that. But what about this? Because you're almost, when you go into a franchise that is so beloved and so successful, I mean, 3 of the top 10 biggest movies of all time, you know that there's a certain amount of pressure on you. I don't want to be the guy to screw it up. I think back to George Clooney, who's another guy who's a terrific actor, who still walks around feeling bad that he feels like he screwed up the Batman franchise. You know, it wasn't his fault at all. He was fine in it, but there's so many things that can go wrong. Weren't you worried that Star Wars would come out and people would go, yeah, kind of pointless. It didn't really need that. First 3 were great. Who cares about the? I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I've never really been one to worry about that kind of stuff, really. That's after, you know, I thought it would be exciting to be in the film. I'd become a father, and I thought, you know, my daughter certainly couldn't watch any of my other movies.
not Trainspotting so much?
I don't know. Come and watch your daddy do this.
Let's sit down and watch Trainspotting together tonight. Yeah. That'd be fun.
Daddy, watch Skag.
So something for the family.
It was something for her, and I just thought, I just thought it would be a trip to be Obi-Wan Kenobi in the films, and I'm not wrong.
Sure.
Did you go back and watch Alec Guinness's portrayal and kind of get some hints from that?
I watched a lot of his early movies as well to see what he might be like as a young guy,
and then worked on his
kind of speech patterns and his voice a bit, you know.
Mm-hmm. And it's there's no more tedious acting job in show business than being in a Star Wars movie, right? It's 100% you're working against a blue screen, right? Pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be careful. I wouldn't say it's the most tedious job or anything like that. I wouldn't say that.
No.
But,
it is. Okay.
It is,
you
but
said
he wouldn't say it.
You said
it.
That.
But
I understand.
Technically speaking, it's very, very hard work. You know, you're having to imagine everything that's round about you. Very often you're playing a scene with something that isn't there.
Right.
And so you're having to imagine their reactions to what you're saying, blah, blah, blah. So it's
And then
it's
when
hard
you see
work.
It, is it a whole different world than you thought it was?
Yeah. And then it's like watching someone else, you know? Because none of it you remember, because none of it was there. So it's like watching another guy do the film.
Do you dislike being asked so much about one movie in your past?
No. I mean, the best thing about it is when children come up and say, did you really cut Darth Maul in half? And how do you switch your lightsaber on and off and stuff like that? I like that, because that's exciting for the children and stuff. Right. There's a lot of adults that come up and get really... ask all the same
talk
stuff,
about, like,
that's weird.
Talk about, like, plot lines and character development and all stuff like that, and you go, hey, it's a movie.
Someone once asked me if I had any advice for them as a trainee Jedi. My advice I wouldn't be able to say at the moment.
Now, there are, there are some people who would have been afraid, besides all the other concerns we've already mentioned, just, man, I don't know that I ever want to be an action figure. I don't ever want to, you know, some people would worry about being typecast in a role like this because you will be so well-known from it. But then you look at guys like Harrison Ford who were in the same position, who ended up carving out a fantastic career with lots of different characters.
Well, that's
right. It's all how you choose.
I mean, I think it would have been, had I not had done any work before it might have been a different ballgame.
Yeah,
I've done a lot of stuff, and I felt that would get me over that. And also, in Britain, we don't really have the same pigeonholing that goes on, really, you know?
Oh, really? It doesn't happen that much?
It doesn't happen to the same extent, I think, because we kind of move between television and theater.
Because you started on TV. Your big break was on television.
Sure,
series, right?
Yeah. Okay. I did a Dennis Potter series, Lipstick and New Collar.
Right.
You don't do last TV you did here that I remember was the ER guest star appearance.
That's right. Yeah.
Is it something that you're not interested in doing, or just something hasn't come along that has captured your fancy since then, or what?
No, it just hasn't come along. I mean, I just loved ER. So to be on it was I just thought, oh yeah, that'll do. Yeah. So I went off to Chicago and did that and had a ball. And this just hasn't cropped up again. I don't have any problem with it going on, though.
Let me ask you this about episode 2, Attack of the Clones, that's coming out next year, and that is, I know that, not only can you not say most things, I wouldn't want you to, because I wouldn't want to spoil it. I want to enjoy it like everybody to go see it in the theater. But tell us about Hayden Christensen, because he's Darth Vader. Tell us anything you can about him in this movie.
He's just fantastic. I mean, he came in, and he must have been, I think he's 19 when we started. I just really love him. He's a great, great bloke, you know, and a great actor, but a really nice bloke, and that's...
Is there anything that you can tell us about the movie, or no?
Well, I get, it's obvious that it's, I guess, 10, 12 years after the first one that we did, time-wise, because he's, 19.
Right. And that's it. Okay, thank you. Very nice.
Star Wars exclusive right here.
Yeah. You heard it here in K-Rock.
It takes place at some point in the future from the last one.
A long time ago, but slightly after the one that you saw.
Right. Way before the other three.
We didn't want that much information.
Have I really upset everyone? Have I given it all away?
Well, I'm not going to go see it now, if that's what you mean, because you spoiled it.
We need to take another break.
You're still a mean man.
There's a bunch of people on hold. To want to talk to
Dude,
you.
Stop playing by the man's rules, Kevin. We're outlaws. We play by our own rules.
Would you mind taking a few phone calls? Shut up, Ralph.
I'll take some calls.
Okay, we'll do that. We want to talk about Black Hawk Down. We want to, again, encourage everybody to go see Moulin Rouge, and we'll be back with you and McGregor in studio in K-Rock.
Keep listening for more tickets for K-Rock's 12th annual Almost Acoustic Christmas. The song up next is going to be Fade by Stained when you hear it be caller 20. By the way, tomorrow on the Kevin and Bean Show, our friend Chris Carter, creator of The X-Files, is going to be here, and our breakfast with the band Creed in the 7 o'clock hour. Right now we're spending some time with Ewan McGregor. He is currently on screens in Moulin Rouge, of course, the new Star Wars movie next year. And we want to talk about Black Hawk Down before we get to your phone calls, too, because Kevin has read 2 books in his life, and he's working on a third, and it's Black Hawk Down. So I think there's a lot of interest out there.
I got to tell you, I am so fascinated with these Special Force Special Ops guys that go do these super secret missions. And this particular one was the tragedy where they lost a couple of Black Hawk helicopters.
Right.
What are you playing it? And tell me about it.
I'm playing a guy called Grimes. Because there's so many different characters in the book, And the book's incredible because it's all written by, he researched amazingly, and it's all the guys who were there, their experiences.
Right.
So I'm kind of a few different characters from the book melded into one, if you like.
Okay.
So I play a guy, Grimes, who's the company clerk, and he's in the office and orders supplies and stuff. And he's been through the Gulf, he's been through Panama, ordering supplies,
right,
and drinking a lot of coffee.
Right.
And then due to somebody who injures their wrist, someone has a wrist injury, one of the soldiers,
right?
Don't want to go too far into that. But he injures his wrist, so I get sent in. And
this really happened, by the way, in the book.
There's a
guy who was not prepared to fight at all, and he just got thrown right in the middle of it.
That kind of wrist injury, is that what we're talking about? Wrist?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it describes in detail jumping out of the helicopter right in the middle of this city where everybody's shooting and trying to kill you, and it's just
unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
You read it and you think, these guys are like 19-year-old kids.
Yeah.
How do we expect them to deal with it? And they do, amazing.
They do, yeah.
You
know. I mean, these are the people that are in Afghanistan right now.
Right.
Well, that's exactly what I was thinking. I mean, this story, if we didn't mention, is Somalia, right? It's in Somalia.
That's
But I was thinking this poor guy, and I saw his father on the news last night, this CIA officer who was lost in the prison riot in Afghanistan. I mean, he was a guy just like the guys you're talking about.
Right.
Who went over there and really just puts everything on the line to try to do the job that needs to be done. And he said before he left for Afghanistan, somebody's got to do the jobs that nobody wants to do. And that's what these Black Hawk Down guys are like.
Yep. Right.
And your heart just goes out to them. Man, what a tough, and it sounds like a great movie too, though. What a great topic for a movie.
But it's good. I mean, at the moment, I think it's really, really good. You know, people can get very gung-ho.
Yeah.
And in this country and want revenge and send the boys in there. But then when you see the film, you see what actually goes on.
Right.
And you see what these young kids have to deal with. You know, I hope that people wouldn't be quite so vitriolic about that.
And sometimes it's super tragic. I mean, sometimes it just goes wrong, and boy, does it go wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
And so war is no good. War is no good.
That war is no good. Right. All right, let's squeeze in a couple of phone calls. Let's begin with Caroline and Downey. Hello, Carolyn.
Hi, good morning, Kevin and Bean. How are you?
You're on with Ewan.
Hi, Ewan. How are you?
Hi, Caroline. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. I have a question. I'm wondering if you have any official websites that fans can log on to and see what you're up to.
Oh, no, I don't, no. There are like lots of unofficial ones, though.
Do you check those? You go through them and go, hey, that's not true about me?
No.
Correcting information about yourself on the web?
Nope.
Emailing myself. Yeah, hi, Ewan. Yeah,
I think Ewan is great.
All right. He's a good-looking bloke.
Man, can that guy act.
Yeah.
Rudy in Los Angeles. Good morning. You're on with Ewan McGregor.
Hey, good morning, you guys.
Hi, Rudy.
Hey, what's up, Ewan? Listen, I have a question for you in regards to Trainspotting.
Yeah.
You did such a good role on there. You played such a believable role. I just wanted to know if you had a past experience in drugs before you did that film. You know, that I believe you really portrayed that role really good, you know.
Too real for your
sake. Are you now, or were you ever a junkie? I'd be happy to discuss that live on the air. No, I didn't know. We worked with a bunch of guys in Glasgow, the Carlton Athletic Club, which is a recovery group of guys to get people off heroin. So we work very closely with them.
Oh, okay. Well,
thank you for the call.
Thank you, Rudy.
And by the way, Trainspotting, if you're ever sitting around and need a rental, you know, or you haven't seen it in a while, that's one of those four or five movies like Pulp Fiction that just kind of changed the direction of filmmaking.
Yeah.
It just came out. It was so different from anything else that we had seen before. And man, what a terrific movie.
Rent it this Christmas and watch it after dinner with the family.
That's great idea.
Yeah. Mom and Dad.
It's a good Boxing Day movie.
Tia in Los Angeles. Hello.
Hey, good morning, Kevin and Bean.
Hi, you're on with Ewan.
Oh, yeah. Good morning, Mr. McGregor.
Good morning.
Congratulations on your new baby, first of all.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
And I have a few action-packed questions for you.
Okay.
First of all, you have a super sexy voice, and I wanted to know if you were going to be doing any other recordings, like an album, another musical, anything that we can look forward to.
Any other singing in your future?
Yeah, I mean, I've carried on recording music with the guy, Maris de Vries, who recorded the songs for Moulin Rouge. I don't want to you know, I didn't want to get a record deal and have to make music for someone else. So, I mean, I'm carrying on recording stuff, and if in the future there's a bunch of it that goes together nicely, we'll flog it off, you know what I mean?
So, no idea.
All right. Awesome. Okay, one quick question. Okay, so in a lot of your movies, you have some super hot nude scenes, and I'm a little upset that there was no dong showing in the Moulin Rouge. And I'm wondering,
what?
How upset are you?
Why no dong?
Yeah. No dog, no peace.
That's the question.
Yeah. No dong, no satisfaction for my plan.
I'm right about that.
You were really annoyed. Well, I'm sorry about that. It just there wasn't enough room for it.
Thank you for
the
calling.
The good news is he does show his dong in Star Wars, though, the next one.
Is that right?
No.
No, okay.
The flesh-colored lightsaber is what it is.
That seemed odd to me.
By the way, speaking of more singing, I want to mention this point again, because Baz told us Monday that they are coming out with a second soundtrack for Moulin Rouge. Because there's so many songs in the movie, you couldn't fit them all on one disc. That's coming out sometime soon.
Yeah.
And DVD, too.
I know you've got to run.
Got to go.
We have so many questions for you, but
let's take one more from Ruby, just because a lot of people were interested in the Natural Nylon, the company they have with Jude Law and whatnot.
Sure.
Ruby, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Ewan.
Hi, Ruby.
I'm a big fan since Trainspotting.
Oh, thanks.
I saw you on Jay Leno. You're funny.
Oh, yeah?
You're so cute.
That was a good laugh.
What about those penguins things?
I know,
a guy plonked a penguin in my lap and then threw a fish on my trousers. I think I didn't come on the show for this kind of treatment.
Or you did, maybe.
Oh, maybe I did, yeah.
What's your question, Ruby?
Oh, my question is, I know you have a company called Natural Nylon with Johnny, Jude, and Sean.
And
I saw Nora. You were great in it.
Oh, good,
it was
thanks.
A good film.
Yeah, beautiful
film. I was wondering, when are you going to have the next project released from the company?
We start shooting the next film in the spring next year. And it's, in fact, a film, it's a production company I set up with my friends, Jude Law and Sadie Frost, Sean Pertwee and Johnny Lee Miller. And none of us are going to be in the next one. We're kind of producing it.
Is that the Shakespeare one? Or Hellfire's Club.
Hellfire's Club is something we're still in the future.
So this is a way for you to. This is a way for you to.
Cromwell Fairfax is the next one, and we've got a long list of things that we hope to do. You know.
Because that's got to be fun for you to be able to do projects that you are passionate about, to be able to help them get made and help out young people too.
I mean, we just set up to make films the way we wanted to make them, and the film that we made to date is a film called Nora that I co-produced and starred in with Susan Lynch and. It's the story of James Joyce's lover, Nora Barnacle.
Mm-hmm. Any dong in that one?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Plenty
of dong in that one. And I think that can probably be rented. So go and rent it and have a look at my old chat.
There you go. There we go.
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that this young man who's been our guest this hour, Ewan McGregor, has a future in films. I think he's on the right track. I think the guy's going to make something of himself.
If he plays his cards right.
Yeah. Sure. Moulin Rouge is in, I believe, eight theaters in Southern California. It's being re-released, and we've all seen it. It's not one of those things that everybody's raving about, but we can't get enough of this movie. We can't tell people enough. It's so unique and different and fun and weird and just, it's great. Good. You really have to go see it. And then the DVD's coming out, and then, of course, you're going to be in Black Hawk Down end of December. That opens here. And Star Wars and blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, blah. Thanks, guys. Look, it's a real trip for me to come on K-Rock because it's the only station I listen to when I'm in L.A.
Thanks
so
very
thanks
much.
For letting me come on.
Absolutely.
We enjoyed it,
pleasure.
Thank you.